You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am still currently a staffer at IndyCornrows.com. I know I've not written there in a while, but still a staff writer there, and as always, I am one of the co-hosts of this Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, it is our, I guess this will be our fifth installation of our player recap series, I think. Well, it might be our fourth one, actually. We did one, all the extra players out there. That means all the guys who play for the Pacers in 1 minute, between one and maybe like 60 minutes. All the bench guys who got garbage 10 minutes, all that. Then I did a Victor Oladipo one and a Miles Turner one last week. And this one is the first one of our week. This week is Darren Collison and Tony. We'll be back tomorrow with, I believe, a Thad Young player recap. So, without further ado, let's get to Darren Collison. The overarching question with Darren Collison is, was 2017-18 season with the Indiana Pacers his best season as an NBA player? Was it his career season? Did he peak at the age of 30 in his eighth season in the NBA, ninth season in the NBA with the Pacers? And the question, I would answer that question with probably. It was probably his best all-around season he's had as an NBA player. He had a season in 2014-15 where he put up 16 points per game. But when it comes to the package of leadership, all-around just, you know, non-traditional stats, that was his best season ever. And I would say when it comes to playoff success, I know he didn't have a fantastic playoffs, but he was in an integral part of this Pacer team and in their run. I think those three things together, the fact that he was a leader on this team and he was important in winning the season and that he had such a great season statistically when it comes to just numbers, percentages-wise, probably makes it his best career season. He was just shy of the 50-40-90 club. He missed the, well, I guess they probably round, but he shot a 49.5% from the field, 46.8% from three, an NBA, led the NBA in that, averaging three attempts per game on 69 games played, and then he shot 88% from the free throw line. Again, just missing the 50-40-90 club. Arguably, like I said, his best season ever. His traditional stat line was 12.4, 5.3, and 2.6. But his shooting percentage numbers were off the charts. He had one of his best offensive seasons, I would say, when it comes to offensive rating. He had a 126 offensive rating. I believe he led the NBA in a turnover ratio at, I believe it was close to four this season. He had one of, like I said, it may not be, you know, traditional stats off the page, popping crazy, but, you know, when it comes to the advanced metrics give him the win, kind of the same way it does for Al Horford. I know it's a weird comparison to make that, well, Al Horford, whatever, defensively is better than Darren Collison, but offensively, Darren Collison was his equal, if not better than Al Horford in terms of the advanced metrics. You know, it probably bought him his second-year option. I thought coming into the season, it was 50-50 whether he came back. It really, you know, depended, could he, like he did, shoot above 40% from three, which he shot 46%. Could he stay healthy, which he mainly did. He suffered a minor knee injury where I believe he sat out for 11 games and he missed a couple games here and there, but nothing. Besides that, about 1 month stretch, which includes something loss of breaks, really only included about 3 weeks of play where he was out with a cleanup in his knee. He was pretty much fine. He struggled with that knee injury most of the first half of the season. There are times he'd miss a game or you would see he'd be kind of play worse because of the knee injury. So getting that done might have actually prolonged his career to, you know, if this knee injury is kind of healed, it will help him next season at least. And it definitely bought him that $10 million second year option because definitely worth $10 million, I would say. Probably if he hit the free agency market, he would probably get around the same kind of deal he got last year, probably a two-year deal, but maybe close to 30, so a little bit of a deal for the Pacers. I think offensively, he was a top-10 point guard in the NBA this season. Defensively, maybe not, although in the playoffs, he wasn't terrible. He did a decent job. So he's taking George Hill. You know, he averaged about a steal per game. He was okay, but obviously for a guy, first of all, he was handicapped for a guy his size. You expect what he did, but obviously he's not the length of some of the better defending point guards. But the Pacers did a pretty good job, even with them on the floor, playing pretty good defense because of Miles Turner's rim protection, because of Oladipo and Thad Young's ability to get deflections and steals. They were able to play around Collison. And Collison is very fast, great in transition. That also helped. He was a fantastic player in pushing the pace when needed to, but also slowing it down when the team got going too much. he was really kind of, I would say, the adult in the room at times on offense. You know, there were times where he just let Victor do Victor stuff. It was give the ball to Victor and let him run the whole length of the court, let him, you know, get isolation plays. But when it came to kind of big moments, Collison was sort of the guy that said, give me the ball, we're going to slow this down, or we're going to push when we need to, or we're going to, you know, find, we get the right mismatch, we're going to set this up right, we're going to get things working right, and he did that. I think a couple times he was favored for Joseph just because of defensively at the end of games, but in a couple of the really important games where I felt like they needed to get offense, he was there. I think one of his best games of the season was early on against Memphis, where he had 30 points. Pacers won that game, I believe, on an overtime on a Miles Turner block. But Collison, probably best game of the season, 30 points and 8 assists. I thought he had a really good Game 7, really Game 6 and Game 7 combined. But Game 7, I thought he was really good, really effective, 9 of 13 from the field for 23 points. That might actually been his best game of the season when you think about the stakes and put all that in. But overall, like I said, he had a... You know, he had some nights where he came out kind of like a dud, but he most of the time was in the double digit scoring and was very efficient with the ball, not turning it over. And this, the question really with him now is, does it translate to next season? You know, he is 30 years old. He is an older point guard. He's got a little bit of injury history, obviously, with the knee surgery last year. Is he on the, you know, the other side of his prime right now, or is he sort of going to keep this up, you know? If you look at his stats in Sacramento from last year, the traditional numbers were very similar: 13 points, four assists, two rebounds per game. But his shooting percentage was a little less, and his shots per game was a little higher. So like he was 47, 41, and 86, which is a little bit lower than he was this year. You know, I don't think he can shoot 47% from 3-point again next season per se. But if he could get his attempts up, if he could get up to like 5 attempts per game on, you know, 9 shots and made that 40%, that would probably be worth it because it would overall lead to more points. I think now that he has become sort of a reliable three-point shooter, or at least seemed like one, there's more offense you can run with him off ball. I think there's a good opportunity to play Vic as point guard and use Collison and Bogdan in the corners. You know, that's kind of lethal if you put Bogdan and Collison, who theoretically are 40-plus, close to, you know, at times 50%, I bet, corner three-point shooters. That makes kind of the offense really, it kind of opens the floor up. You think about it, if you put them in the corners and you run pick and roll with Vic and Thad, or Vic and Turner, and you put, you know, Turner on the wing and have some guy like Thad or Turner coming to the rim, you sort of create this whole open, you know, open offense where there's lots of space to work for Vic to the rim or make passes. I mean, it would really open up the offense, and you saw it a little bit. A lot of times Vic, you know, was just going to the rim and scoring, but if Vic could really get to that next level of being able to go in the lane and kick it out to an open three-point shooter, that would sort of also help the Pacers. So I think there's that opportunity there. There also is an opportunity that Collison, you know, often gets picked up. Like I said, it most likely will. It's pretty cheap that he gets traded, put in some trade package for somebody else. You know, he is the right point guard on a bench team looking to contend. So, I mean, you're talking like the Houston could use him on their bench, I would bet. Cleveland, if they're still competitive with LeBron next year. Even some of the teams that are sort of below that, like probably not the Raptors, but the Wizards could use a guy like that on their bench. If there's trades to be had, the Pelicans would be a good team he could be on too off the bench. There are a lot of teams that could use sort of a, you know, a guy like him off the bench who is such a reliable three-point shooter, is very consistent game to game, doesn't really turn over the ball a lot, is good with the ball, good with controlling a bench unit, which he can be good at, and a guy who really understands his role. You know, with the Pacers, he wasn't overly selfish shooting-wise, didn't, you know, say he needed the ball all the time, was okay with being benched at the end of games for Joseph on defensive end, but he was still, I think, a leader on this team in the sense that he had the experience and that people, you know, respected him. I think a lot of the players sort of looked at him, especially on the end of games at times when he was in, that he was sort of controlling the team and being the voice of reason at times, because, you know, like I said, Vic loves to just run if he can, and it seemed like times Collison was kind of directing him. Even when Collison was in the game, Vic was the point guard, you would see he would tell Vic, it's your turn, you take the ball, you initiate the offense, it's better with your hands kind of thing. So he's willing to defer. He's not a guy that's like, I think it's all about him. So I think overall, Collison's a good player to have. The problem is, obviously, if you bring him back for one more year, he's another great year. How expensive is he to re-sign? You know, you lose the asset. I mean, I think last offseason, the signings of Collison and Bojan really changed the direction of the Pacers. Obviously, the trade for Paul George did, but you know, this Pacer team before the season was sort of like wanted to play fast but never had the players, wanted to, you know, play stretch, have five guys who shoot threes, but never had the players that are playing Monte Ellis's, the Rodney Stuckey's. I mean, and they're even Jeff Teague, who I thought was a pretty good point guard, really just couldn't get the space around Monte Ellis at times. And George, you know, for as good a three-point shooter he is sometimes, but sort of wanted the ball in his hands at all times, wasn't willing to kind of sit back in the corner. And I think Bogdan and Collison were sort of the perfect fits for this team where, you know, it allowed a guy like Vic to emerge, the player became, because they were willing to defer, but also they move really well in space on the offensive end. You know, defensively, Bojan and Collison aren't great defenders, but, you know, when you're putting up 126 offensive rating, you can kind of be a 110 on defense and still be a positive on the floor. That's what made Collison so good this year. I mean, again, you have to give him huge props for three-point percentage. That was incredible. Like I said, you also have to hope the knee injury sort of is solved, because I think that was a big issue for him midseason, where if they played too many games or too many nights, his knee would act up, and that would be a big issue for him. You know, when it comes to Collison, there's not a lot of comps, I would say, around the league for Collison. You know, I think he's at this point in his career where you know who he is, and it's whether, again, he can keep up that 47% three-point percentage, because if he can do that, I mean, he could play in this league forever, and he'd be effective at $10 million a year for two or three more seasons. And the question is, what role he accepts? You know, did the Pacers bring in a young point guard in the draft? That also is kind of important. Is Collison a mentoring type? He seems like he could be, but who knows? You know, what if Corey Joseph gets off to a good start? Is he okay being supplemented by that? Does Joe Young emerge or something? You know, Tony's a big fan of Edmund Sumner. You know, that's the question. If another point guard emerges, is Collison okay being in the back seat? And he's probably the most likely trade candidate just because his contract is not guaranteed, but also because it's an expiring deal and he had a pretty good season. Like I said, on a contending team, he'd be pretty valuable. I'm not sure he's worth a first-round pick on contending teams, but he's probably worth, you know, in some kind of package. You know, if you're a team that trades away your star but wants to remain competitive, or, you know, I think he fits perfect in like a Memphis trade package for Conley if they do that, because he gives Memphis enough players where they can still be competitive but gets them off that large Conley contract. But like I said, at the end of the day, he's most likely coming back. The Pacers probably run back the same roster, add a piece or two here or there on the margins, but don't do anything drastic, you know, to make a huge jump. Maybe TJ Leaf emerges, maybe a rookie of the draft emerges, but that's kind of where they're going to improve, or Turner gets better. And that's what Collison will have to fit into. He'll have to help Turner develop. He'll have to, you know, maybe this will be a season where he focuses on getting Turner the ball more in good positions. That could be important. All that stuff, though, is, you know, up in the air, and I am trusting Collison. I would trust him, to be honest, because I thought he was the most consistent signing last year. I thought Bojan had the most potential and had great, but I think when it comes to the signings between Bojan and Collison, I like Collison the best, just because the way he really changed his offense from what would just seem like it was stuck in the mud, slow, fake, fast offense to, like, this offense is really good this year. I don't know what it finished in the NBA, but the Pacers' offense was really dang good this year when you watch it at times. I mean, they figured out how to complement your offensive defense with him and with Joseph. It worked really well in the regular season, and I know in the playoffs he had some minor success at times in Game 6 and Game 7, but he was great, and the Pacers finished 11th in offense, and a lot of that is due to Collison, because he had one of the best ratings, I think, among point guards in the NBA this season. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow with a Thad Young season recap. Tony will be doing that one, and then next week we're going to do a Blance Bojan to go with our weekly podcast we do every week. We'll try to be back on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. It is Memorial Day, but we might have a special Memorial Day podcast. Listen to Monday, Tuesday, whenever. If you have not checked out our already podcast posted on Tuesday, go ahead and check that one out. That was pretty good. We sort of did it was 30 days to the NBA draft, so it was a really early draft guide for the Pacers. Lots to be up in the air over the next couple weeks, so we'll talk about that more on our weekly shows with me and Tony. As always, you can follow me at FriedmanAdam5. You can follow Tony at TeastNBA. And you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Leave us 5-star reviews on wherever you listen to this podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever. I don't know. There's lots of apps. I have an iPhone, so I use Apple. But there's lots of places to listen to podcasts. You still have a Samsung. Use Stitcher all the time. Great thing. So leave us a 5-star review on those. And as always, you can send us comments to our Twitters, and we'll respond. Most likely, we're very good at responding. Even if you have some vitriol, hate on us, whatever, send us things that we think you did wrong on. Well, if you're trolling too hard, I probably just won't respond, but I like to troll. I laugh at them. I enjoy the hate and the trolls. It's kind of funny. So do that. You know, send us stuff on Twitter. As always, have a great rest of your day.